Life's Third Act is a podcast dedicated to helping you get the most out of your retirement. Sponsored by Tucker Allen, here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
So we're picking up today with the second part of our life, death, and estate planning of Casey Kasem. I hope you enjoy it. Take care. Different people obviously want different things, and this living will is a wonderful way for you to declare to the world, this is what I want, and it's this document would be handed to healthcare officials. It could be handed to anyone. So it's not saying, this is the person who makes decisions for me. It's just saying, this is what I want. And incidentally, that is conclusive. However, you don't want that document to be contrary to a durable power of attorney in which you want somebody to do something different, because then you have a situation that invites litigation. And I suspect at a war between the two, authority is going to be found in the living will. But it's ideal to have all of this. In this case, to my knowledge, there was not a living will, but there was a durable power of attorney for health care. And interestingly enough, he didn't choose his wife as many people do.
Yeah. Do you think there was a reason that he only had a power of attorney instead of a living will, or both?
Well, I think that he probably was thinking that he wants somebody to have a sort of moving ability to make decisions, and he didn't want to try to anticipate what they are. And the nice thing about the good part of a durable power of attorney, whether it's somebody who can manage your affairs generally or the healthcare, two different domains, just to be clear. The good thing about that is that you're allowing somebody's judgment on the spot to govern. So if you know that circumstances change, if you know there are things that come down the pike that are unanticipated, then it's kind of nice, really, to go to somebody whose judgment you fully respect, their loyalty, their trustworthiness, and say, look, I'm giving you the power to make decisions. Mm-hmm. You know what's good for me, whether it's making decisions about managing your financial affairs or whatnot. In this case, it's health affairs. So I think that he trusted her judgment, and he wasn't sure what lay ahead. Perhaps he had That's the diagnosis fair. At the time, so yeah. it did prompt him to start thinking about mm-hmm. it. So I don't think we should read too much into this in terms of his relationship with Jean, although later I think it was argued that this was an indication of you know, there were problems that lurked below the surface of their marriage. There may have been, incidentally. We're not saying that we know they had a happy marriage, but we're just saying that we don't have any evidence of any serious problems.
Yeah, and he may have not felt the need to put that on her, too, which is a big thing. I mean, he might have thought, just, why not? Like, you know, I'm in love with her. My kids don't like her that well. It's just going to be a whole thing, so I'll just give it to one of my children instead and make them all happy. But
yeah. So the plot thickens.
Yes.
Do you want to describe what happens next big event?
Yeah, so in October of 2013, prior to that, Gene was starting to cut off contact with his children and make sure that he wasn't able to contact them as much. And remember, the diagnosis, nobody knew about it besides his family at this point. And so in October of 2013, October 1st, the children, his brother and a couple of their friends went out and did a protest actually in front of the mansion.
So Casey's brother gets involved too.
Yes, and that is why the diagnosis came to light and everybody started knowing about it. And I mean, I feel like the kids themselves didn't even know the actual diagnosis because they thought it was Parkinson's. So if that tells you anything, that's probably how much contact was cut off from their father.
Yeah, for a long time,
yeah,
probably.
For a while.
Since he had lost the ability to initiate communication.
Yeah. So that all happened, and then the family decided, you know what, we're going to go to court, and we're going to apply for conservatorship.
Well, let's talk about an event that occurred first that's interesting was...
Strong roots are essential for a healthy tree, especially your family tree. That's why you work hard to take care of your family every day. At Tucker Allen, we know that taking care of your family means planning for the future. Our team provides personalized estate planning to help you protect your family, your legacy, and your future. From wills and trusts to long-term care and estate planning, count on Tucker Allen, personalized estate planning made simple.
I think this is before going to court. Correct me if I'm wrong. So they haven't had access to their dad for a while. and they're determined that they're going to get access to their dad. Mm-hmm. And his brother joins them. So they have this demonstration, right, in front of this mansion.
Yeah.
In this this very stuffy neighborhood of Beverly Hills. I think it's Beverly Hills. Anyway, they have this demonstration in which they and friends are in front of the house calling out for her to allow them access. So they make the announcement. Of course, he has this illness, and the press, I'm sure, were there. So Jean is inside with their dad. They've not seen their dad for God knows how long.
Yeah.
And so they imputed bad motives to Jean, and they suspected that, you know, there were some wrongdoing going on. So they demand the right to see their dad,
mm-hmm.
which should be a reasonable request.
Yeah.
So the police were called. I don't know how this was ultimately resolved. We know an action was filed in court for them to have access. So and these events are a little convoluted depending on which account you read. The kids file an action with the court,
mm-hmm.
and they want access and they want a conservatorship. But the first action was to have a declaration of incompetence. In order for you to have a conservatorship or a guardianship, you have to first have a finding of incompetence. So they file an action with the court, and this is with the county in LA, in mm-hmm. California. I guess is it LA County?
I believe it's LA County, and it encompasses a lot.
Yeah.
So
a California county. So they file this action in California, and their goal is to obtain the power to manage his affairs and to get access to him. So many of you right now are thinking, well, wait, there's this durable power of attorney for healthcare. Mm-hmm. How can they manage healthcare if they can't see the quote unquote patient or the person who's in their care, so to speak? Well, that's one of the flaws of these devices. When I mentioned a while ago that they have shortcomings, they're in the normal circumstances, I think everyone can understand this can be hugely useful. But on the outer edges of circumstances where you have this fight that's taking place within the family and you have somebody who's denying physical access, this document is something that's outside a court's order. It's not an order by a judge. It's a voluntary document. While it may have power, you have to go to court and you have to get an order from a judge in order to compel someone to allow you access or to compel their behavior in a way that allows you to do what in this case Casey wanted. It isn't self-effectuating, is my point. And that's often the case with things that are documents between people, is people get angry because you have to go to court to enforce it. But there's really no alternative mm-hmm. to that unless it's, you know, self-help. And self-help is when you go in and, you know, you kick the door in and then somebody gets shot. And so that's not a good thing. So they bring this action. But one of the flaws of this document, though, is it doesn't guarantee them access. Even when they get into court, the court, it says to the extent there are decisions like that need to be made, you can make them. You have that authority. But it doesn't say that you have the authority to get in regularly to inspect or to check on their health care or to say, I want them to be taken to a hospital for care. You can authorize the care, but you can't compel their caregiver to physically take them to a hospital, in this case, Gene, to physically take him to a hospital or to a nursing home, et cetera. He did incidentally end up in a nursing home, mm-hmm. and he was in a nursing home in California. And while this action was still pending for this appointment of a conservatorship and guardianship, which does give the power I was just talking about. So if you want to know how is it that you add real firm teeth to these documents, to a document such as a durable power of attorney for healthcare or a durable power of attorney, conservatorship relates to money and assets. Guardianships relate to physical care. Some states have these all in the same. They call it all a conservatorship. Others call it all a guardianship. But it's really logical in my mind to distinguish between these two. One manages stuff, your assets, your investments, and all that stuff. That's a conservatorship usually. In California, I think it's included in the word conservatorship. Mm-hmm. And the other is physical care, which in California is included with the other. So the physical care is very different. It's taking care of your needs, your health needs, your medical needs, other things, where you stay. Those are things that are more of a nurturing nature, and they're different from the things of managing your money. And I like it because Missouri makes that distinction, and most states do, between a conservatorship and a guardianship. But some states lump them together, and I think California is one of those. But the point is, there was an action pending for a conservatorship, and this was filed by the children, mm-hmm. and they probably would have, I'm pretty confident they would have gotten it. But while this case is pending, what happens?
Yeah, so it was actually denied. They denied it in November of 2013, the conservatorship.
2013.
Yes.
And what was the basis of that?
I didn't really find anything. They just thought that he was fine where he was at because he looked healthy. And
that's right. There were two. There were two.
Yes, there
Go
was
ahead.
Two. So in the meantime, Casey gets moved to that nursing home that we were speaking about because I guess Gene finally decided that it's not good to keep him here at home. And then in May of 2014, while the kids were still trying to get access to him, Gene just decides that she's going to remove him from the nursing home. And she gets poor Casey, just unhooks him from everything, puts him into her SUV and leaves. And nobody knows where she went. And the kids find out. And then a nationwide manhunt actually starts for him.
So and let me back up and add something to integrate this. The fall of 2013 action was denied, as you said. And so she goes ahead. She has to put him in a nursing home soon thereafter because he's not doing well, apparently. And then they file a new action for a conservatorship, which was, that's what I was thinking, was going to be granted. And she knew it was going to be granted. And this would have been what, in May or
this
April?
This was in April.
Yeah.
And so then she removes him.
So she knows what's coming down the pipe. In this case, the court is, at the second hearing, they're persuaded that Gene is out of hand. She's given instructions to the personnel at this nursing home that clearly is contrary to his interests. Like, she wanted a discontinuation of artificial nutrition and hydration, which... Mm-hmm. It wasn't because he was soon going to die at that point. She instructed this, and she wanted it. And so at this point, there was a document filed with the court. The court was clearly going to grant the conservatorship to either Carrie or Julie.
Mm-hmm.
So what does wife do? Wife looks really bad in this story.
Yeah.
So Gene, I don't know if it's a night before. One article I read said night before. But anyway, soon before this, the gavel was going to go down. She, as she lawfully can, she's the spouse and the caregiver. She takes him from the nursing home to a new state, out of the state of California. So when this gavel goes down, it issues a conservatorship that is not immediately enforceable except in the state of California. Now, you can take an order like that. It's not as if it has no value in another state. States, for the most part, want to uphold such orders from state to state because it makes sense. So it has to be registered, though. And so that's time and delay. And meanwhile, when they finally locate him after a national search, they don't know where she has taken their dad. And for a while, they had heard out of the country.
Yeah, so they get conservatorship on May 12th. And during that time, Gene's lawyer is like, he's out of the country. He's out of the U.S. And they're like, what are you talking about? So the nationwide manhunt starts. And they finally track her through California all the way to Seattle, Washington. And the only reason they were able to do that is because she stopped at a friend's house in Las Vegas that same night and told the friend what they were doing. So the friend came forward and was like, hey, I know where they're at. So Carrie heads up there, and she also, like you said, she has to apply for conservatorship in Washington. She gets to the house with the paramedics, and Gene comes running out and throws raw beef at her in the street.
That is just bizarre. I don't understand the point of what she said.
Yeah, I don't either. She's saying something about, like, in the name of King David, here's, like, this raw meat to feed these dogs and keep my husband. It was so weird. I have no idea.
Maybe it's reference to something in the Old Testament?
I don't know. That would be such a weird reference, though.
Yeah, it is. And is she Jewish?
I don't think so.
So anyway, at this point, you know, the entire nation is watching. Perhaps many of you remember following this. But it turns out that she's living, that Casey is in the care of a friend in a house. Apparently has not been moved much.
Mm-mm.
Because there are now bed sores.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, he's not been given the attention he should have been given. I think we can conclude that.
Yeah. In June of 2014, he was moved to a hospital. Well, he was moved to a hospital when they got there, but after she threw the raw meat at them.
And that was when the police showed up to get him.
Yes.
So there was this confrontation, and that's when this scene took place.
Yeah.
That we're describing, where she gets this, how many pounds? A pound of raw?
It was like a pound. Yeah, a pound of raw beef.
And throws it down outside the house and makes this statement about King David and, you know, this, I'm giving you this flesh in exchange for my husband.
Like from the rabbi. I
think it's probably somewhere in the Old Testament, but that's referenced. I'm curious where that comes from. But anyway, obviously the police at this point is convinced that she's
it's crazy. You know,
that she's nuts. And anyway, he's transferred to a facility, ultimately back in California.
Mm-hmm.
How long thereafter did he pass away?
So, in June he's transferred there, and then a judge is like, I'm sick of this. So he, grants different visitation periods to Gene and the kids. And then and that was June 6th that all that like.
Of 2014.
Of 2014. And then on June 15th he passed away. And it was from sepsis and his bed sores.
So, I mean, it's possible to have bed sores without neglect. I think that a nurse would back me up on
that. Yeah, I worked in a hospital for a bit. It's very possible, but it's a lot easier if you're in home and you're not rotating the person and you're not cleaning them if they're there and everything like that.
Yeah,
so.
So it makes you suspect. And I just think that this was a really ugly situation, as ugly as I've seen in a family, where you have these sorts of scenes and the police called and grabbing the relative and fleeing to another state.
And it just keeps getting worse, too.
It you might imagine it doesn't conclude there. Continue. So he passes away.
So he passes away, and since the kids have conservatorship, they have every right to his body, and they were going to take it and cremate it. And so they do that, but what happens is Jean gets there first. She's in the hospital when he passes. She gets to his body first, and
she's the grieving widow.
Yes, and she puts it in a funeral home of her own choice. So the kids are like, okay, that's fine, but they do file a temporary restraining order against her because they want to keep her away from his body.
And they didn't want to cremate it.
Yes. And so what she eventually does is somehow she convinces the funeral home to give her the body, and she goes out of country with it to Norway.
Well, she first went to Toronto.
Yeah, yes.
Was it Toronto?
It was Toronto. And they were trying to catch up with her, and
then she goes to Norway.
Yeah, then she just goes to Norway.
So apparently she was headed to Norway, though, I think.
Yeah.
I know you're thinking, wait, you're expecting us to make sense to you why this was Norway. We don't know. There's no connection that I could find between her and Norway.
No, not even him in Norway. And it was 6 months after he died that she finally buried him also.
So it's just a bizarre series of events, and if you look at any single event, you can make sense of it, but then you look at the trail of events, and it just looks more bizarre. For example, the fact that she got the body is a little surprising, but not shocking, because she's the wife. There's not a court order in place regarding the body itself. There is a conservatorship in place.
Yeah, and he didn't have any, he didn't have anything in his will. Well, he didn't have a will or anything like that telling people what he wanted done afterwards. So, she didn't technically get in trouble for any of this because beyond the conservatorship, there wasn't really a whole lot.
Yeah, believe it or not, there was no charges ever filed, certainly no conviction of her criminally. The children very much wanted an autopsy done. They were convinced that an autopsy would reveal, you know, mischief on the part of Jean. She would have inherited everything, and that's that. Even if I read one place, there was a will. Did you read that?
I read like a couple different things, but the majority was saying he didn't have one.
I know, and that's what I read most places.
Yeah, because I was trying to find the actual will documents since it would have been public.
It would have been filed, and I didn't see it.
And I didn't see anything.
So, apart from this, this one columnist that mentioned there was a will, everyone else is united. There wasn't a will. Either way, it ends up the same way, because even those that one article that said there was a will, she was named as the, you know, I mean, she's the wife, and not shocking, she would be named, although in this case, she got everything. And by intestate succession, which is when there is no will, and I think that's what we have here, she's going to get everything. I mean, if they had been minor children, then most states would have given them certainly a substantial share. But when you have adult children and a surviving spouse, then a lot of states' intestate succession laws would give them nothing. They give it presumed to who they presume you'd want to have it, which is your life partner, who in many cases will then, it's in at least in an intact family, will then give it to the children when the surviving spouse passes away. I think that may be the underlying theory behind that intestate succession statute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so they couldn't get her on kidnapping a body charges, anything like that.
No, they tried. I mean,
they did try.
The ugliness didn't really stop there because there was a lawsuit after that.
Yeah, and in November 2015, the children sued Jean, and it was for elder abuse and emotional abuse of them. And then Jean countersued and made up this whole thing about how she thought Carrie was premeditating Casey's murder because she wanted money, and that's why she was trying so hard to get conservatorship so she could just, you know, do away with him, which is kind of funny because she was the one who was keeping him away from hospital. Jean was the one keeping him away from hospitals, keeping him away from getting the care that he actually needed. So there was a bunch of different allegations. A bunch of people thought, you know, both sides were trying to murder him for the money, so on and so forth. But it's settled outside of court. And so we don't really know the end of all of that or how it got settled.
Yeah. In one of the suits, the claim was for $250,000, which would have been a small part of his estate. In my mind, as I look at the equities on either side of the table here, I just think my sympathies are with the kids. Having read their comments, it's hard to believe that they were pursuing anything monetary.
Yeah, and I know from what I read that their lawyer basically is the one who was like, you need to settle, and like, we're not going to go any farther with this, because they didn't want to at all. Mm-hmm. But their lawyer convinced them to settle outside of court, and it was, I mean, Jean probably offered them a significant amount of money that the courts maybe wouldn't have given them. So that's probably why they thought it was a good idea. But like we talked about, she still got the house. She still got big parts of the estate. So we're not, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I'm assuming she didn't offer them a lot because they went away very angry even after this was settled.
Yeah, I'm sure for them it wasn't even about the money.
No,
either.
And I believe it. Carrie said, she said, we're not interested in a penny. We'll donate anything we get. You know, she really, I think it was just, I hate to call it vindictiveness because that makes it sound low and mean-spirited. But I just think that there was bitterness. There was a lot of bitterness toward what she had done to intervene between them and the dad.
Yeah.
So I'd be surprised if they're motivated by just by money at all, really.
Yeah, and I'm sure there wasn't enough evidence to back either case because nobody knows. Nobody was in the house with Jean and Casey. Nobody knows why, or if he was telling her, I don't want to go to a hospital or something like that, and she was listening to him. So, I mean, they probably couldn't get either. And the whole thing about Carrie and the children being there and trying to murder the dad is just kind of wild.
Yeah,
so
seems silly. And And if anything that has the smell or look of that, it's Jean's actions.
Yeah.
But I mean, she may have really thought that the kids, you know, wanting to do something to him. You wonder what was her motive? Was it just being, you know, very malicious?
I don't know. It might have been that, but I feel like when something happens like that to your spouse, you just get desperate for anything mm-hmm. and everything and to hold on to every single piece. And I don't want to make her out to be, you know, the good guy here. She did a lot of things that probably contributed to him dying sooner than he maybe would have. But I don't know. It might have been out of being just vindictive. It might have just been out of being completely desperate.
But wait, and I can buy some of that.
Mm-hmm.
But really the final step she took.
Yes, yeah.
Which was taking the body with a determination to, and I can't imagine any other motivation, to place the body someplace that the children cannot even go visit the grave.
Mm-hmm. And maybe she was crazy enough by that point to think, oh, they wanted him dead, so I'm not going to let him do anything with the body. I'm just devil's advocate, but...
yeah, it's a sad situation.
It is.
You know, having a will doesn't necessarily fix all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in this case, I think if there had been a will, it would probably have said that he wanted his money to go to Jean. I don't know evidence of his having supported the kids. I mean, he supported them when they were small, but mm-hmm. I mean, as adults, there's no evidence that he was a source of financial support for the kids. So, you know, I can imagine that he might have thought this is the right thing to do, to leave my money to my surviving spouse,
yeah.
who for her to be able to continue the lifestyle she had always known. I keep in mind here the value of the assets involved. In this case, remember, we talk a lot on this show about intellectual property, and with famous people, like our subject matter typically includes, you know, you're talking about copyright, you know, branding, name, image.
Yeah.
So that's what you call intellectual property. It's that intangible right to be paid every time somebody uses, you know, plays a recording of you. I notice I still listen to Sirius when they replay these 70s, and they'll choose the week of the year, and they'll pick up the hits of that year, the 40s, and they'll count that down. And to me, it's very enjoyable because it's think how they can keep doing that decade after decade until those of us for whom it's very nostalgic and who derive a lot of satisfaction from that, you know, that'll die off. But it's good for a few more decades. And so Sirius, I think this is the regimen regarding this, is that they'll take 71, like 2021 and 2011 and 2001, and they'll choose the week of that year, and then they'll do for the next year, it'll be 72 or 2002, 2012, 2022. And they can just keep, you know, going through the decade and doing that over and over and even into the 80s. So, I mean, how long will this revenue mm-hmm. flow through? I don't know what his estate, what his wife now has paid, but she's paid something substantial.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as those recordings are of value, and I think they will be, and not just with the top 40, but the America's Top 40,
yeah.
but also his other top 40 shows.
Yeah. And I mean, even with Scooby-Doo, they still like,
oh yeah,
they still do those. They did like the live action versions of them. And they just actually made like a new cartoon movie that came out. This is ridiculous, but, but it came out last year and they used his voice in it for some of it. So
really?
Yeah. So it was like little, like cameos at the end with the original characters, but
huh.
I know.
so it just, I mean, you know, there's a lot of value in estates like this now that aren't apparent on the balance sheet at the time. They do try to value this, incidentally, when
mm-hmm.
when the personal representative, which is the person, they're called executors in some states, this is the person whose job it is to find all the assets and to list them and to give them values and ultimately do what's called an accounting and to submit that to the judge. So there is an effort to value these things, but the valuations on this stuff, at least in the past 20, 30 years, have been way off, largely mm-hmm. because people didn't realize what the lifespan of people's reputation, their work, their music, their acting, all these things have a life and a value beyond what was estimated in estates, you know, as recently as, say, 10 years ago. Now, they're starting to do estimates that are more reflective of mm-hmm. true value going forward. But it is a little bit of a guess. Not you just don't know. But the bottom line is, I'm sure he had a significant estate. We couldn't find the amount from the documents filed, the total value of his estate. We know it's available because, remember, one of the downsides of having a will or dying intestate is that this is public. Mm-hmm. So if one of us were inclined to get on a plane and go look this up at the courthouse, I'm convinced we can find out what the valuation was when he passed away in 14.
Yeah. And I mean, he was signing like $15 million contracts in the 70s. So
in the 70s.
Yeah. In the 70s and 80s.
So, The house, as we said, sold for, or it was listed for $37.9 million in 21. So 21 was a good year to sell real estate. So I suspect that sold at a good number. I'm sure there were other assets, and furthermore, there's income. So Jean's probably doing fine.
Yeah.
I assume she's still alive.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything about her dying.
I didn't either.
So she's probably doing fine. I doubt she and the kids are talking yet. I do know she's alive because they just resolved resolved the lawsuit, or it was 19.
Yeah, 2019. So. But I didn't see anything about her passing or anything
no.
like that. I'm sure that would have been big news.
This is a case where, let me make a few comments about the estate planning before we wrap up, is the best way to have handled this, quite frankly, would have been for a trust to have been created. Mm-hmm. Somebody who has this much money obviously can create a trust. I'd argue anybody middle class, at least middle class should have a trust. Some people who wouldn't consider themselves middle class, meaning they're below middle class, many of them it would make sense for a trust. But I'm comfortable making the blanket statement that middle class and above, meaning you have a significant amount of assets, you should have a trust. And if you have a substantial amount of assets, you should definitely have a trust. And this would have allowed, you know, Casey would have appointed the people he wanted in charge of all of his assets. He would be operating under this system. There's no testimony and a judge trying to figure out who's telling the truth about who is related in what way and who he said to what regarding how he wanted his estate managed. I mean, rather than have that ambiguity and fog that you often have in court battles regarding estates. Instead, you have a trust in which the rules are spelled out. They're in operation. The rules are in operation mm-hmm. up until their death, and death doesn't create anything more than going to the next page on the trust to see, okay, here's what we do next. So it's very different from opening an estate and having a personal representative file documents with the court and inviting people to come in and argue. So, and that's what probate is. It's an invitation, literally an invitation, meaning notification saying if you have a claim, come forward. So it's an invitation for creditors and loved ones, both aggrieved and grieving, to show up and say, give me money. So it's just a... In this case, though, where you'd have no communication about what the intentions were among the parties, mm-hmm. then I think it magnifies the risk of problems. So if there had been a trust here, if there had been clear expression of intentions, if everyone had been told, ideally in the company of everyone else, so there's no confusion about what's said, but the lesser, if not that, then at least a clear statement to everyone, this is what I'm doing and this is why, and for that to be expressed in writing in advance of death. Really, it may cause some hard moments for everybody, maybe an uncomfortable Thanksgiving or something, but it really heads off the arguments about, well, he said this and he wanted me to do that and he was under duress when he signed, a common argument, mm-hmm. Medication, he could have been confused, he was not competent at the moment, those allegations that are made, and certainly they're made in this case. So that would have been the most powerful thing that could have been done, and that in conjunction with the living will and the durable power of attorney. The durable power of attorney would have been, except in these most extreme cases we just described, mm-hmm. these are the outer limits. Absent that, in 99.9% of the cases, they're very helpful.
Yeah.
And they make life much easier. But when you have, you know, the sort of craziness here, unfortunately that means people say, well, gee, why do you give money on courts? Why do you have to incur all these costs and mm-hmm. lawyer fees and have the unpleasantness of being in front of a judge when it regards such sensitive and painful times? Well, the reason is because of something like this. This would, you know, if she had denied access, a spouse had denied access where it looks like, you know, her husband may be lacking medical care or something, mm-hmm. and then it's going to invite litigation. So courtrooms, I'm afraid we can't abolish. Even when you do a good estate, you can do good estate planning and have a good chance of never having to go into a courtroom related to any of your estate planning. But if you marry somebody who's crazy, or if you have kids who are crazy, and if you have both, then
if you don't want them to do weird things with your body,
there's no estate planning that's going to keep you out of a courtroom. But anyway, so this has been another episode of Life's Third Act. I hope you found it interesting. Thank you, Marley. Great research, great topic. Till next time, take care.
You've been listening to Life's Third Act, a podcast for thriving in retirement. Sponsored by Tucker Allen, your estate and elder law advisors. Each week, we discuss topics and answer questions to help you better plan for your future. For more information, visit TuckerAllen.com. Subscribe and listen again next week for another edition of Life's Third Act. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.